Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey there, welcome to ATLN29, a no longer Peachtree Hoops podcast where we look at the NBA from the starting point of Atlanta. My name is Kevin Chouinard. I'm here with Glenn Willis. We're recording on a Friday night in between the Thunder and Clipper games. And Glenn, I just want to start by saying the podcast is not dead. And any reports of our demise were premature.
A story of my life. I know. Still here, still kicking.
We may ask you to subscribe to some new stream. You know, we may have to change the name, but I don't even think we have to change the name because, you know, part of the reason for the initial tagline where I would say ATL and 29 of Peachtree Hoops podcast is because we were supposed to be the Peachtree Hoops podcast and we were bringing ATL and 29 into that fold. And I was leaving the door open if somebody else at Peachtree Hoops wanted to do a podcast. So the name Peachtree Hoops podcast is going to die, but I think we'll still be ATL and 29, no matter where we go.
I like it. I like
so,
it.
So, yeah.
I have to admit, it took me, like, before I had anything to do with this, it took me a good year and a half to figure out what the name was about. I was like, demographics, how does this fit? I can't. No, I'm embarrassed. I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but yeah. Eventually, someone just outright said what it was, and I was like, "Oh, that makes so much sense."
I'm always very glad that the Hawks are first in the alphabetical listing of teams.
Absolutely,
it saves. Absolutely. I must have saved like 36 hours of my life just scroll down. A boom, that's the team I want to see.
Before we get into basketball, I should tell you this story. So I'm an identical twin, right?
Yes.
My identical twin brother and I graduated in the class of, I want to guess, about 450 people. We went to the school 1 year, our senior year. He was a move and all that sort of stuff. But he was a top 10 graduate. He was 10th.
Yes.
And so when they lined us up to enter the auditorium where our graduation was happening, guess who was very, very first? They went 10, 9, 8. You know, they did the inverse of the first 10 and made him first.
Okay.
Last name is Willis. You want to guess who the last person to enter the auditorium wasn't in the top 10 was?
Huh.
That's what are the odds? You teach math, right? What are the odds that's how it would end up?
That's certainly very strange. I don't know. That seems tough to do.
I wanted to say something about the last being first and the first being last or something, but I don't know. He's just smart. He's smarter than me, so. Nothing I can do about it.
Uh-oh. Well, there's still time to catch up.
I hope so. I better get to work. The gap's pretty big.
So the Hawks had a couple of wins. Not a couple of wins, a couple of games. A loss to the Bulls, a win over the Thunder. Do you have any super-duper takeaways from those two games?
I thought the Bulls game was frustrating because I know that they didn't play very well in the first half. There were a lot of things to kind of point the finger at and kind of be frustrated by. By the third, I thought in the third quarter they got complete control of the game, controlled that whole quarter basically, and then all they had to do was figure out some way to, I don't know, tread water while Trey was out, and it just didn't happen. Nothing came together in those minutes. And then it's like the turnover. They stopped turning the ball over so much in the third quarter. And it's like in the fourth quarter, they couldn't get the juice back. So it's frustrating to see that. I know they were short two of their key players, and that happens and stuff like that. But OKC game, they were more resilient, I thought. I mean, OKC plays at a maddening pace as well. But they got control in the third quarter, kind of, and then maintained control going through the fourth, even though they tried to kind of open the door, I think, at least one time there in the fourth quarter. But, you know, I feel like the last few weeks before the All-Star break is like the most, it's like the heaviest grind of the season for teams. Right. And I think that's where everybody is right now. And I think you have to keep that in mind when you watch the team, but still, what, 6-2 in the last eight. So hopefully still feeling good as a team, and we'll play well against the Clippers tomorrow.
So, you know, going back to that Bulls game, because I think that Bulls game was a particularly good example of the Hawks struggle without Trey. Like, if you look at the on-off splits for the Hawks this season, they are plus 53 with Trey on and minus 74 for the season with Trey off. They're just better with him on than they are with him off. He's their best player. They're all-star. We can get back to that in a minute too. We don't know if he's going to be an all-star this season, but right. he's the one on their team right now with the most all-star honors in his past, or at least in his most recent past. So what should the Hawks be doing when he's not out there, and what parts of that have they been doing, and what parts of that do you think that they still need to add to whatever it is they have when he's not on?
I mean, there's a few things we talked about, a little bit of it, but I mean, it's harder when they don't have Hunter, you know, as an option. But I still wish they would play through Onyeka in that situation. I feel like, you know, it's like in that Bulls game, DeJounte was dribbling into some terrible turnovers, right? It's just as one example. And it's not like I'm not suggesting he should never handle the ball. He should never initiate. The whole trade would be pointless if that were the idea.
Right.
But I still think that there are times when that offense would flow if they were playing sort of delay action or other kind of five out action, getting the other opposing big away from the rim. I think that opens up kind of more space there. And especially if you're working Onyeka and JC, you know, gives space for JC to kind of duck in, kind of take a mismatch down there and things like that. So I know it's hard to imagine that actually happening on an 18 running a completely different set of principles when Trey is on versus when Trey is off. And it's not like I think they should do that every possession when Trey is off, but I'd like to see them kind of get more to that. And take the pressure off DeJounte to kind of get them into everything. Now, if Bogey were 100%, you've got some solutions there. And in fact, against the Thunder, Nate called a good timeout in the fourth quarter. I thought Trey was going to come back in right away. And the adjustment that was made in the timeout was they started playing through Bogey, and they got 6 points in the next two possessions, a good shot in the third possession there.
Yep.
And so that worked right. out. So, you know, I mean, part of DeJounte's issue is just there's not a lot there, especially if you're missing Hunter. And then if Bogey, you never know right now, you're getting 40% Bogey, 70% Bogey, something else. You know, it's hard to know. But for me, it's like, let's play through Jalen and Onyeka. That's kind of what I would, if Jalen's on the floor, play through JC and Onyeka, you know, flip that. And that's what I'd like to see them try that. I can't sit here and say, I know it would work, you know, but I feel like there's some untapped opportunity there to do that. And that's what I'd like to see as kind of the first shot of an adjustment.
Yeah, I was nervous about that change at first. I was like, oh, they're going to run it through Bogey. And you know, the last couple of weeks, my goodness, like it feels like teams have been able to take away you know, anything that he can do off the dribble. Like he's it seems like he's pot hesitating a little bit on his jump shot, just because he's got to kind of measure out, you know, can I attack a closeout? It just seems like he's a little bit more hesitant, unless he just knows, okay, this is a catch and shoot and it's going to be there. Like, I don't know. And all the drives just seem very, very methodical. Like, he's got to he's got to make contact and just kind of drive through the contact, as opposed to, you know, anything else, just, you know, leveraging how much somebody's how hard somebody's closing out or whatnot. But he, you know, he made it happen. I mean, he's still obviously an unbelievably gifted offensive player, but I'm concerned for the months that he took off in the hopes that, okay, you know, we're going to rest, we're going to do it right, and he's going to come back and it's going to be great, because now he'll finally be healthy and rested. And it just, I don't know, it doesn't really look like it to the eye test.
Yeah, I'm hoping the break is like exactly what he needs, you know. Now I would be tempted to like just sit him like the last two games before the break, just, you know, try to give him a whole 2 weeks there. That comes down to probably who else is available and what happens at the, you know, in the run up to the trade deadline and all that sort of stuff. But you know, it's, I mean, he's a sort of a swing factor every night right now. If he can make two or three key shots, especially in the second half, it gives them a huge boost. If he can't, and they can't kind of figure out a defensive role for him that might work a little bit for him, then it's, you know, I see a lot of talk on Twitter and elsewhere about they just need to pull him today. You know, it's too much. And I've felt that way myself a few times, you know, where it's like, man, if he's not making shots and they're going up against a team that really knows how to attack, you know, vulnerable point of attack defense, that, but, you know, big picture, zooming out, it's like they have to have him, you know. Yeah. They have no shot without him. Whatever amount of juice he can give them, they have to have every bit of it. That's just where they are as a team with the roster construction and the lack of depth and such.
But how do you think?
I'd like to see Onyeka get more opportunity to initiate. That's, I mean, I know it's not going to happen, but that's what I'd like.
Fair enough. How do you think the Hawks did defending against, you know, Oklahoma City's five out stuff, which is just, you know, different. It just seems like they sort of take it to the extreme with the skill and the size of the players that they have, you know, just going so unbelievably small and really spreading you out. It seems like a difficult challenge, and, you know, it creates some, I don't want to say weird basketball, but, you know, maybe, you know, giving up 120 points or something is a good effort against them, because it's just such a different version of basketball to take into an extreme.
Yeah, and I mean, and Shea is just so good.
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, I liked him in the draft and all that. I never thought he'd be this kind of a shot maker. I mean, it blows my mind every time I watch him play, and I watch him play every chance I get, because he's a great watch. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you know, again, the grind game to game to game, seeing a completely different kind of team. Like the Bulls, you know, go pretty slow and unless you turn it over, and then they will absolutely, you know, race to the basket. In the half court, though, they take an eternity, right?
Right.
Then you go next game, you get to this, and it takes a quarter or sometimes a half, you know, especially this middle of the season where it's where this real grind. And I mean, sometimes I know Hawks fans maybe don't want to see it this way, but treading water for that first half was a fine goal, you know, not, right, you know. Yeah. So, and then in the third quarter, I mean, the shock of all shocks was that they put Bogey on Shea, and when I, you know, and Bogey did exactly what they needed to do, right? And it reminded mm-hmm. me so much of when, like, Gallo was defending Randall on that Knicks series a few years ago, and he was, what, like 1.5 strides, you know, steps off of Randall, and just cutting off like those two direct kind of dribble drive lanes. And that's what Bogey did. And it's interesting, because I realize, like, you'll see this a lot in Europe. And so it's like, oh, kind of makes sense that Gallo kind of could execute this. And now that Bogey can execute that, where if a guy just doesn't have the lateral movement, they'll just drop him and just say, just don't let him dribble like right through you or right past you, you know, and nudge him towards some help and things like that. But basically Bogey was on, it felt, I mean, I don't remember exactly what it was, but Bogey was defending Shea, like, I don't know, the most of the second half, like the whole fourth quarter stretch Shea was on, Bogey had him. And that was just fascinating to see that. And Shea couldn't really kind of do anything with it. So First half, tread water, figure something out. Attack the offensive glass and try to get enough guys back, which those two kind of polar opposite kind of objectives are hard to cover in kind of one setting. But then the Hawks offense took over. I mean, Trey kind of took over that game, for a portion of the fourth quarter. And I know that Hawks fans see OKC as a team that's still working up through a rebuild and want to think it should be an easy win, but they're not an easy win ever right now. That was a good win.
I think it would be easier to play them in the playoffs if you just kind of got used to them and you had some halfway decent personnel for matching them, and it's just not such a curveball.
Yeah, I had a conversation with someone on Twitter, and I was like, they're not going to be able to continue playing this way when they are starting to try to become a serious team.
Right.
Because there's just too many things to take advantage of. Or once you get to that point of the season, smart teams that can plan and prepare will take advantage of that. But I love it as a way to get Jalen Williams reps, Josh Giddey reps, rep volume,
When you said draft about Shea before, I thought you were segueing to Jalen Williams. I was like, yeah, he's pretty good.
You're right. He's the one that I said on this podcast, he's the one I wanted the Hawks to take.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled with AJ, so I'm definitely, but I mean, you have, if you're the Thunder or a Thunder fan, you have to be absolutely thrilled with Jalen Williams too.
Yeah. Speaking of AJ, he's in talking about facing the Clippers tomorrow. He said something to the effect today of that he thought the Clippers game in LA was sort of a turning point for the season, which to my that feels about right. That seems to be when they really kind of tightened some things up. We've seen Trey get a lot better defensively. I thought he kind of bridged that, kind of split the difference a little bit in OKC. I didn't think he was great on defense, but in that kind of pace, I think he needed to save a little bit, and it worked out. Like, he carried them in the second half. Like, I thought that was an absolutely masterful Trey game. For what you could kind of get and expect out of him on both ends. But I, to go back to AJ for a second, I'm tired of talking to AJ. And you think, why? He's such a nice kid. He's 19 years old. Okay, some context. We go to practice. We go to shoot-arounds at the practice facility. Some days you make a request. There are some players, if you ask for them, they're not coming out. DeAndre Hunter just really doesn't like to do a whole lot of talking, so he just he doesn't want to do it. Other players don't want to do it. I swear to golly goodness, we get AJ like 70% of the time now, and it's like, you got to live up to your media responsibilities, as nice and as affable as it is. And it's probably something where you could say, hey, Rook, you go deal with it for us. It's like it's getting a little bit counterproductive. I'm tired. I need other players besides AJ if we're going to tell the story of the Hawks for the 2022-2023 season.
That sounds perfectly reasonable.
But yes, we love AJ, but we need some variety to cover the team properly. It doesn't help that, we also have Nate, and Nate's a wonderful person, but he's also not a revelatory interview.
No.
There's that. All right.
I know.
I digress. What else should we be talking about, Glenn?
The Clippers game should be fun. That the one in LA was fun to watch. It was fascinating to me to see T. Lou close with Zubac, but that's not normally the way he goes where that game was.
Right.
And Trey ate up the drop coverage like he does a lot. So it'll be fascinating to see kind of which direction they go in this case. So, I mean, the Clippers are a fun team. So I just enjoy, I enjoy me some Terrence Mann, and I don't enjoy Marcus Moore, the Morris twins, so much. But Batum's fine.
Do you enjoy Reggie Jackson? My
More
dog is
than
sneezing.
more than the average person.
Really?
I'm pretty pro Reggie.
Wow.
I think he's, always trying to help his team, even when he's not helping his team. It's one of those kind of things that's like it's coming from a good place. It's like, people will make fun of like some of the moments he's had the last few years when the Clippers have had a rough, roster with injuries and everything. And he's just a guy I like. He's like, okay, I'll go out and try to score. I'll try to go out and create offense, even though
Yeah,
he's
there's value in
not,
that.
and just he'll step up and try, and I just kind of respect that. So I enjoy him in that sense. But Luke Kennard is enjoyable. Terrence Mann is enjoyable. Zubac is enjoyable. Batum, great team guy, kind of connector. So there are other guys there as well. But I enjoy watching him play. But I think what this will come down to is, what can they get from Kawhi? What can they get from PG? What can the Hawks do to throw some point of attack defense out there? And what kind of it's going to take help and, really, really good defensive team principles to kind of deal with all that. So from that standpoint, I think it's going to be one of the most interesting games the Hawks have played in a while. Thank
Yeah,
goodness
and
Hunter should play, sounds like. And so thank goodness for that, because it would be precipitous if not for him, his availability.
yeah, it makes a big difference to have DeAndre Hunter in, and Paul George should be in this one too. So,
Right.
I, as you were mentioning, that could impact, I think, maybe whether or not they would hesitate to play without Zubac at the end and go with a different strategy and try to frustrate Trey in a different way, because a recent match that didn't pan out for them. So I'm interested to see what happens there. And having DeAndre Hunter is good after a couple of days of not having him for the asthma symptoms. And I asked you a question the other day, and I said we should postpone it till the pod. And it's like, if you were to literally include everybody, like all NBA players, if we rounded to, I was going to round it to 450, so like 15 players a team. Like, if you were to rank them 1 to 450 based on point of attack defense, where would you put DeAndre Hunter?
I think my answer then was like comfortably top 25.
Yeah, that's about where I would put him too. I think he's probably going to be somewhere in that 15 to 30 range.
Yeah, and then I think for me, when you add in his excellent interior help defense, I mean, considering all, I think he's been a top 40 defender this year. Clint's in that top 25 to me. He's that dynamic of a big. He's that unique what he gives you. But I mean, and I mean the record will tell you they can't really sustain anything without those two guys. Maybe can get a win now and then with missing just one of those two guys, but they don't win when they don't have those two guys. I throw JC as a top 60 defender probably. I mean I that's maybe I'm making too much of his ability to organize and the weak side help, and maybe it's 70, I don't know, but I just he JC has helped them win some games they had no shot at winning this year. And then Onyeka's, I don't know, is he top 100, top 120? Like it's really hard because he has some kind of up and down in some settings where he just doesn't really have it, and then there's other settings where he dominates for key stretches, so it's he's harder to kind of pin. People would think DeJounte's probably what a top like a 70th percentile defender in the league, something like that.
Yeah, it's trickier with guards
Right.
because for most guards, you're just always at a side disadvantage. Like if you talk about playing him, yeah, I don't know. That seems about right. And again, with Hunter, I was sort of trying to do it as sort of like a point of attack defender, and
Right.
as opposed to just all around defense. But yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah. I mean, they need DeJounte's defense. Like his ability to disrupt plays, create steals, apply ball pressure. He's kept Trey out of trouble. So that, I may not be giving him enough of kind of the John Collins points. I give John a lot for how he helps his teammates. And DeJounte at times really gives them a lot. in that area. So maybe I'm not giving him enough credit for that. But it just goes to show, like, after that, you're not talking about anybody who's in the top half of that 450, you know. So they gotta have those guys, you
Right.
know. They gotta have those guys. So it's yeah, again, the trade deadline is getting every bit closer, and I'm just still curious if they're gonna
Actually,
look at me.
Jalen could be in the top half.
I like that. Yeah.
I think that's
Good catch.
which game would do he had like a stupendous block against Oklahoma City. Like, I think in the moment it was like, okay, Jalen got a block, and then if you like went back and looked at it, it's like, woof. It was like a chase down block, but really in like the half court, but he just like rotated
Right.
so fast. It's like
Yeah.
that was a cover.
Yeah, that's a good call. That's a good call. I'm a little embarrassed because I've been the one saying for weeks and weeks now he has to play in my mind. You know, and he does give them a lot on defense. His athleticism, his ability to, I mean, against Oklahoma City, his rebounding was, for in his minutes, were so
Yeah.
critical, you know. And so yeah. He's not quite as important as those other guys, but if you're just evaluating like his where he performs, I think, top 225, is
Yeah.
that seems very fair, So yeah, I'm excited. I'm still excited about him, and hope he can continue to get that opportunity. But it just tells you how narrow the margin is for this team. They gotta have Clint, they gotta have Hunter, they obviously have to have Trey. And really, even defensively, they have to have DeJounte. They have to have Onyeka. They have to have, two of those guys are out, and the whole plan falls apart. One of those guys is out. You hope you get a B minus C plus effort from the opposing team that night, and you kind of get enough. But man, it's a it, you'd love to see them fortify that. Like I mentioned, Jake Fisher had another article come out today, and apparently the Blazers are open to moving Josh Hart because that it sounds like they don't think his contract, what he expects to get in that contract, is going to fit. It's like, man, how brilliant would he be on the Hawks? Just some size and some point of attack defense and some just versatility offensively. But I was like, I don't think it makes sense to go get him if you're not if you're not if you're going to operate under the tax the next one or two seasons because you're not going to keep him. But yeah. My expectations are pretty low that they're going to make a meaningful move because of where they are and just juxtaposition to the cap. But it sure would help be able to give Bogey a night off here and there, give Hunter a, 3 games in 5 days. And, so if they're going to chase a top six seed, they need a little more than they have right now, I'm afraid.
And let's assume that they don't. So let's what's your ultimate sort of like penny pincher move that the Hawks is just, without sacrificing a ton of assets and something that you could do within sort of the cap margins? Is there one player or at least one style of player that you're like, even if it's sort of a third string guy, they need one of these. What would you try to go out and get, or who specifically would you go try to go out and get?
Yeah, it's so hard. I think about, having some shooting at the five, like Muscala would be a great option, as a third center to give you just a different kind of thing offensively, to drag an opposing big out, to get a Joel Embiid out of the paint, on some possessions, to get Brook Lopez out of the paint on some possessions and things like that. I mean, but if you're gonna do penny pinching with like defensive wings, like are the Bulls? It sounds like the Bulls want 2 first-round picks for Caruso, but are they gonna maybe look at moving Green or Ayo? What does that even? I mean, both of those would be awesome gets for the Hawks, but what does that look like? I don't really know. Could you get Josh Okogie for like really cheap? And
Right.
he's offensively, it's a tough thing, but if anyone can make it work, maybe Trey can kind of get that to work. But he'd give you something that would work on defense for the even if it's just 8 minutes a night when Hunter's off the floor and you don't have Clint or something, you know. So those are the guys that come to mind for me. It's so hard to kind of think of really anything else that jumps out for me.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, if they don't, I think, you know, for whatever they can do here down the stretch, I think they need to play Trent Forrest more, not because, you know, you expect Trent Forrest to be in your playoff rotation, but it's, you know, one, they're killing guys on this like 8-player rotation. Like Bogey right. is playing an unsustainable amount of minutes, I think. And you're just asking for trouble with some of these 35, 36, 37 minute totals for some players.
Yep.
But yeah. I think you need to play Trent Forrest more just because, you know, what do you do if DeAndre Hunter is going to miss 4 games of a playoff series? Like, are you just dead?
Right.
Is that it? Like, is that all you got? Like, I don't know. I think, I don't know. Maybe it's Aaron Holiday more.
And when the other guards
with
are
Aaron Holiday and he gets a lot of 4 minute nights and it's like, maybe he needs to play 18. Like, but I think they need to keep Forrest ready, or maybe he needs more college park time or something. Like, he's probably a yeah. pro's pro and can get adjusted pretty quickly, but man, I don't know. I'm nervous with the depth there of the point of attack defenders. If they don't make that move on the margins.
Yeah. I mean, Gary Harris, maybe that's a guy.
Right. He'll probably ask too much.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, you know, I mean, they could use Terrence Ross's shooting if you know, but he has a pretty pricey contract. It's going to be hard to salary match that one. I mean, you can't send Justin out in 5 trades, you know, right. only one. And yep. then you got to make that enticing in some other way, I would presume, you know? So, I mean, it'll be, definitely kind of fascinating to see kind of what takes shape and what comes into possibility. And, you know, with Travis being out of the mix and decision making, and I, you know, it's hard. There's really no history for us to work with upon which to base our no. expectations. Right. So it's a crapshoot from those of us kind of on the outside watching, trying to figure out what happened. But I just know, like, you know, it'd be so nice if they could get like a guy like Josh Hart who can handle the ball and defend the other team's best, you know, wing. What can they go into a kind of a bidding war to get a guy like that? Get, you know, if they can't get him, they need something to replicate what Hunter gives them on defense for, even if it's just 8 minutes a game. If there's one thing that's the one thing they have to go get, as much as I'd love them to have another guard that can get DeJounte off ball a little bit more when Trey is like, you know, the number one thing is like, they're dead without DeAndre. I mean, at least Onyeka gives them what, 70% of what Clint gives them on average. You know,
yeah.
DeAndre is not playing; they get zero of what he gives them on defense. You know, and so that's the thing to address. So we'll see if they're able to make something happen or not.
Do you have any strong feelings on Trey's All-star starter vote that he finished 12th in the player vote?
I think that's a ridiculous result. You know, I mean, I love Tyrese Halliburton. Even he's had right. an awesome year. He's not better than Trey.
Well, he got 34 votes and Trey got 13.
Right. LaMelo
13 votes. Like there's 17 players on the Hawks. Like 13 votes is not very much. Like Kyrie right. had 128. Donovan Mitchell had 117. 13.
Yeah, and I think it's 50-50 at best that he even makes the team this year.
Which is fair. Like, you know, for as good as he's been the last month, like the first couple months was kind of dicey, but.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, so my main response is I don't care about the All-Star game at all. None. 0%. I never watch it. That's not true with the Elam ending.
There you go.
Yeah, with the Elam ending, it has become more interesting. So I'll catch the second half and things like that. So, But for me, it's like the trade that has been here, like the last, I don't know, say 3 weeks, where the communication on defense is up, the engagement on defense is up. I don't mind that he's not making shots. I mean, I to me, I kind of understand, like, he's exerting more mental energy and physical energy on defense. There's going to be, he's going to need time to kind of know how to regulate his energy investing on both ends like this. And I hope he keeps doing it. And because the Hawks have to have that from him if they're going to be a serious team. And so if that calls him an all-star game, I hope he has the maturity to say, like, okay, this is just part of my process right now, where I'm recalibrating kind of where my energy distribution, how my energy distribution is going to work. And if that costs you an all-star game, I know he wants to accomplish a lot in his career. I know he wants to be an ambassador for the game. I think he has a lot of good intent around stuff like that, but I'll take this trade. I'll take this trade over any trade I've seen, you know, because I think he's going about it the right way and the way he has it before. So,
yeah, that's very good. I like that. Shoot, I forgot. There was something else I was going to say, and I've just drawn a blank. So thanks.
We'll get it next time. Thanks, Kevin.
All right, good night.
Good night.